the vibes. Welcome to a very special episode of the Hoop Genius podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K25. As always, myself, Momoutsi, alongside me, three-time NBA champion, Mr. BJ Armstrong. And joining us today, you know, a man with a resume so long, I don't think I can fit all the accomplishments into one intro. So I'm going to just hit you guys with the two words you need to know. Joe Dumars joining the show. How you doing, sir?
Thank you, Mo. I'm good, man.
Congratulations, first and foremost. Congratulations.
I'm a fan of the show, man.
I don't know. I think he's being kind, Mo. I think he's being kind, you know.
Absolutely.
No, we all over here, we talk basketball every day, and, you know, we talk about the ongoings in the NBA on the court and off the court as well. So congratulations are in order with your new position as president of the New Orleans Pelicans. How are you feeling now? It's been about a week or so since the announcement. How are you settling in? How's everything been going?
Settling in well, easy. One of the things I said at the press conference, Mo, was right place, right time, right people. And so those are important things, because if either one of those three is not right, you know, it may not feel right at the time. So for me, right place, right time, right people means a lot. And I'm here in my office right now in New Orleans, and things are going well. Things are going fairly smoothly here now. We're undefeated right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, Joe, congratulations.
Thank you,
and
sir. Thank you,
I'm so happy for you and your family. And you get a chance to go back home. Mm-hmm. But before we get to all of this, I must update you on our prior to like doing all of the talking here. So, Joe, I was in LA yesterday. And for those who don't know, Joe and I, we had this convenient, we would meet at least once a week the state of the game. Yeah. And Joe, I went by one of our favorite places, New York Bagel, and it's no longer. I went there.
It's not
in
open?
Honor of you. I was going there in honor of you. You know, we have a lot of friends there.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
And I was going by just to say hello. And Joe, it's no longer there.
Oh, man. We lost another institution, man.
Yes, we did. And we solved a lot of problems at New York
Bagel. Yes, we did. For sure.
No, I wanted to share that to you, with you. But Joe, there's so many questions, and we talk. Mm-hmm. But Joe, for all of the young people in here that dream are inspired of being in the front office, you've done it all. With the team there and the success you had in Detroit. Joe, can you share with us what was it like for you to look at all 30 teams in the last 3 years there in the league office? And what was that like? What did you learn? And what would you bring from that experience to New Orleans?
Yeah, great question, B. So first of all, you get a bird's-eye view of how each organization does business, just how they operate, what's important to them. You know, the phone calls that you get from the 30 teams, it's an insight to those organizations and what's most important to them. And, you know, I'm sworn to secrecy, so I can't, you know, divulge exactly what those conversations were, but it was fascinating for me to get to look at all 30 teams and see the things that they put on the top of the list for themselves that they wanted to discuss and talk about. It was fascinating. Second thing I would say is that you did, I say this, you learned, you got a view of best practices and worst practices. Right. And so it was an incredible seat, B, to look at every single team, to look at league office view of things versus the team. It was just fascinating, and I enjoyed it. You and I have talked a few times over the last 3 years. We've talked a couple times, and I said to you before, this is an incredible job. It's a great job. And I wasn't leaving, B. I told you that. I told you before, like I wasn't leaving. Love New York. Loved working at the league office. And I was completely content. But as you also know, right place, right time, right people can get you off your mark. And so that's what happened here. It was the right place, right time, right people. Not sure where else I would have left the league office for it than to come back to New Orleans.
You know, for those of you who are listening who don't know, Joe was the executive vice president of basketball operations at the NBA, and he oversaw the development of, in particular, the rules and the interpretation of the rules and the conduct and the discipline. So, you know, whenever certain players would get in trouble, it would be Joe who had to lay down the law. But I have a question for you because we've been speaking about this on the show over the past week or so. Watching this brand of basketball being played in the NBA playoffs is a significant change to what we've been seeing over the last 9 months. I want to know, Joe, was this your parting gift from the league office, sending out a little memo saying, let the fellas play? Because you were on the Bad Boy Pistons, you put together the 04 Pistons. Is this your leaving present to us?
Before I answer that question, Mo, do you like what you're seeing right now?
Oh, I'm loving it. I'm up every day till 6 in the morning watching these games. Come on, man. It's nice to finally see them play.
Well, here's what I say. As these games play out, I've never heard a fan, I've not heard a player, I've not heard a coach, and predominantly, I've not heard the media complain about what they're seeing right now. We're playing basketball, man. We're playing some basketball now, and I love it. I love it, man. And so I do think that in all seriousness, Mo, I'll say this. Whether it's physical play, whether it's the 3-point shot, whatever the rules are, that you know, transition take five, whatever it is, when you cut through all of that, Mo, what people really want to see is intense competition. They want to see competitive friction out there. They want to see that, man. And that's what sports is. You turn on, it can be a tennis match. And the reason McEnroe and Connors and those guys were so popular is because of the tension that they had out there. It was the reason Wilt and Russell, the tension out there. And when you take that away in sports, that's a problem. Because that's why people turn sports on. They want to see that competitive tension. And it's happening in the NBA playoffs right now. And I love it.
Absolutely. Of course, you know, your new team, the Pelicans, not in the playoffs this year, but that competitive conflict, as BJ likes to call it, the competitive friction, is
Yes, sir.
that going to be your point of emphasis in what you bring to the organization now? Because I feel like the Pelicans, for a long time, they haven't had too much of an identity. And bringing that toughness that you brought to Detroit all those years as a player and as an executive, is that going to be your main priority when you're building out this roster and building out this team?
We intend to have competitive tension now. I can, like Mo, anything that I've accomplished in this game, in this NBA, was surrounded by, it was the foundation was competitive tension. So I'm not sure I know of another way other than being super competitive to be successful in this league. Even if you, Mo, say, if you look at the teams now, and I said this to one of the young guys here last night, we were just talking, and I said, the formula for success in the NBA has never changed. Style of play has. Where you shoot from, is it a low post game? Is it a 3-point game? Is it a half court game? Is it faster pace? Those things have changed. But there are certain things that have not changed. That competitive tension, that defending, that not backing up, that plan for your teammates, like totally invested into winning. Stats don't matter during the playoffs. No one worried about what your numbers are. Those things have never, ever changed for championship teams, for contending teams. And so when you see that and you recognize it, It's a beautiful thing, man. I love it.
You know, Joe, in 1985, I'm old enough to remember there was this young kid that got drafted to the Detroit Pistons with the 18th pick in the draft. And most people don't know this, but we have a bond with the 18th pick. We always go over that every year. And in 1989, I was drafted
18.
18th.
Yes, sir.
I want to say a word to me to you, and then I want you to tell us what this word means. Resilient. What is
Resilient.
that? Resilient. Yes. What does that word mean to you and your career and who you are and what shaped you as a young man when you first came to Detroit?
I guess resilient for me, B, is this. Resilient, really, there's no plan B. There is no plan B when you're resilient. So even when you fail, you're not going to pivot to some plan B. You're going to keep going. Interestingly enough, the people of Louisiana and the people of Detroit are very similar in that way. Resilient. A city like Detroit, a city like New Orleans, resilient. And so I'm really comfortable in those environments where I'm surrounded by people who are resilient and the setback is not a failure. You understand what I'm saying, B?
Yes.
Like the
Yep.
setback is a setback, but it's not a failure. And so coming from Louisiana and landing in Detroit in 1985, September 15, 1985, I landed in Detroit. And so a setback, all the things people said about Detroit, and then all the things they said about the bad boys and all, I never saw that as a failure. It was just a bump in the road. So resilient is like, it's just never accepting things as failure, B. You just don't accept it.
So when you came in and you had a phenomenal backcourt teammate, Isaiah Thomas. How, Joe, at what point in your career did you realize we can do this as a young player? What point did you say we can actually do this? When I mean this, like win the whole thing.
My second year in the league, I asked Isaiah in practice one day. It was after practice. We were just shooting. And I asked him, I said, are we a contender to win it right now? And I remember he kind of chuckled. He said, we're not there yet. And I was like, why? He's like, we're just not there yet. And he chuckled. He said, I like your thinking, Jody. I said, yeah, I don't get it. And so in year two, I started asking the question. You know what I'm saying? Like, Zeke, are we contenders yet? And he was just kind of chuckling, like, we're not there yet. And my question was, why? And so I guess I would say in year two, I started questioning because I was looking at the league and I was looking around. I was like, I thought we were contenders already. I did. I thought we were, but I was just naive enough to think, well, what are we waiting on? And so just early on in my career, man, I just thought we were good. I thought we were heading in the right direction.
In a similar vein to that, from a front office standpoint, you took over the Pistons in 2000, 2001 season. You went on to win the championship in 2004. But at which point in that process did you think or realize that you have the team necessary to win the whole thing?
Mo, in every building, there used to be always this massive board, and it would be with all 30 teams, and it would be their roster. And in my office in Detroit, we had this massive board, and all 30 teams on the board, and every player on each roster was on that board. You remember those boards, B? And so, Mo, I would sit in my office and just look at that board. Every day, I would just stare at that board. My assistant at that time was John Hammond, who went on to be GM Milwaukee and Orlando. he would come in my office and he's like, Jody, what are you looking at? And I would say to him, as time would go on, as the years started going on, those first 3 or 4 years, I said, John, I'm looking to see when are we the best team in the Central Division? And I think we're there now because we made moves. Other teams made moves. Now looking at the board, and I go, we're the best team in Central Division now. Year or so later, John, we won the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. And I remember I told him, if you ever have John Hammond on, he'll tell you this. One day he walked in and he said, what do you see? I said, we're the best team in the league. And he said, get out of here. I said, yep. Mo, I would just watch that board, man. I would just look at those rosters and I was comparing what we had, what I know we had in the building, to what I was looking at. I was just studying rosters every day. And I remember he came in there that day and I said, we're the best team in the league. He said, come on, Joe, do you see? I said, yeah, man. We're better than everybody up there now, man. So I don't know when, but over the process of that time, making moves, changes, trading, draft, whatever, I would just look at the board and every day I just wanted to just keep everybody else's roster to the forefront of my mind. Because you get in this job, Mo, and you start doing stuff and you're not paying attention to exactly what everyone else is doing. I stayed on that board for like 2 or 3 straight years, man, because I just wanted to make sure that my team was better than what I was seeing up on that board. And if I saw somebody up there I thought was a little bit better, I'm like, man, they're better than us. Their roster is better than ours. We got to get better. And so it was just that, Mo. I did that a lot in that office.
Well,
Joe, and
the question would be though, you've been in back in New Orleans for a week. Have you got your board set up, or are you still waiting for it to be delivered?
I don't have a board. I
You got
got here, there was no board. I got some board. That's okay. But Mo, I'm looking at those rosters every day though, Mo. You know? Mo, you can come in my office. People come in my office and they'll see me on my computer like this. And I'm just looking at I'm just studying those rosters, man. I'm like, okay. So yeah.
Hey, Jody, what you've done in the past is the past, and I know you are always present. Now that you are in this position, can you give us some insight on what direction the game is going to go in as you now begin to get familiar with your team, the league? What do you see the future holds for what brand of basketball is going to be most successful in the next 5 years?
I
Like,
think
how do you
you'll
think the game's
continue.
going to be played?
I think you'll continue to see people play at pace. And I think you will continue to see people emphasize the three. I also would say this, if you look at the top three or four teams in the league, they have something in common. They're putting two bigs out there. They're
The
putting two
bigs are
bigs
back.
out there.
The bigs are back.
You look at OKC, you look at Cleveland, right? You look at Boston, they'll have Porzingis and Horford out there together. Like you look at all of these top teams right now, and man, they got rim protectors, and they may have another 7-footer out there. And so I do think that, when we just talked about small ball, I'm not saying that's completely going away, but there is this trend, man. You look up, man, and you might see Adams and
Şengün.
Sengun out there. Like it's not uncommon where 5 years ago, B, you weren't seeing that at all. So I do think that there's this trend of, yeah, we're going to space the floor and we're going to shoot the three, but man, we need big bodies around this paint right now. Look, guys are so athletic now, can drive to the basket. You better have some kind of paint presence there, or it's a layup line. So the counter to we're more athletic, we're faster, we're bigger, stronger, jump higher is okay. Well, who's going to protect the rim on that then? Because if not, then it's just a layup line. So you got to have some size around that basket, B.
When you look around the league, a lot of people say the NBA is a copycat league. And one of the reasons why we had the small ball era was because Steph Curry was doing Steph Curry things. But you realize over time, and I think now everyone's finally realized, Steph Curry is the one and only. You can't replicate what he does. So trying to play the
Mo,
same
Mo,
way,
Mo,
same
are
way,
you
same
saying
way.
people didn't realize that before?
I don't think they did. I don't think they did. Because I see teams, I see, I like, for example, this season, right? The Celtics shoot the most threes in the NBA, but they have the necessary personnel to shoot the most threes in the NBA because they play
Absolutely.
five guys that can shoot at an elite rate at all times.
Absolutely.
Why on earth are the Chicago Bulls shooting the second most threes in the NBA this season? Because they don't have the same personnel, right? So when you look at the league and what some of these teams are trying to do, how important is it to build rosters that kind of match the style of play and the pace of play that everyone else is doing versus building your own identity and playing your own brand of basketball that might be different to what everyone else is doing, but if it works, everyone will then start to try and copy you?
Exhibit A to what you're talking about is Shai Gilgeous. Shai, most likely the MVP, you would say. Not, he's second, right?
Yep.
He doesn't seem to me that he's trying to emulate everyone else in the league. Neither is Jokic. Neither is Giannis. These guys may be the top three players in MVP voting, and they are playing their style of basketball. I would suggest that you have to play to your strengths. You have to play to your strengths to give you the best chance of winning. If you got a great running back, Mo, you might need to give him the ball. If you got great 3-point shooters, I say let them go. If you got a great mid-range player, it would be foolish to try to force him to do something that he's not as good at. And so I'm a big believer in playing to your strengths. What you're good at, man, let's step on the court and do that. Not what we're second or third best at. Why would I take that chance? You know, and so I don't know. I have an appreciation for teams who play to their strengths. I have appreciation for Cleveland putting two bigs out there, or Houston playing through Sengun, or Shai mid-ranging you to death. I have a great appreciation for these teams that do that.
Is it safe to say, Joe, that there'll be a physical brand of basketball in New Orleans for next year? Will there be competitive conflict? Will there be a little friction? Is it safe to say that, you know, your presence will be felt when you come to New Orleans? You won't come there for a good deal. Is that safe to say that, Joe?
I sure hope so, B. I sure hope so, B. Like I'm a big believer in this tension. I'm a huge believer in this competitive tension.
There might but be a few does, calls with the office. It might be a few calls with the office said, "What happened last night?"
Yeah, I'll take those calls. Hey, B, I'll take those calls. I know the folks who call it. I take them.
I love it. Do you think that kind of physicality and that tension that we talk about, do you think that's something that you've got to go and find the right players who can bring that? Or do you think that's something that you can bring out of guys who may not have displayed that in their career so far because maybe they've not had the right guidance and leadership to allow them to express themselves in that way?
Excellent question. Excellent question. I'll say this, Mo. It's a combination of both. You have to find those people where that's their DNA, but there are some you can convert too now. You can convert some. I'm not saying you can convert everyone, but you can make some conversions with this. But you also have to get people who that's their DNA. You know, kudos to my Detroit Pistons of the past. They've got people who are out there bringing that, and they go from where they were to where they are now. Kudos to my new hire here, Troy Weaver.
Yes,
did a great job. Trajan did a great job as well because he added the right veterans. So let's not overlook Trajan, what he did.
Right.
But Troy put the core together, and those guys have the tension that you need, Mo. And some of them, it's their DNA. And I think some of them, they probably converted to that. And so, and that's the way it works. It's not going to be all of either. You know what I'm saying, Mo? It's like, it's not just all DNA guys, and it's not all converted. You got to do both.
Yeah, I feel like every successful team ever has had at least one of those guys. You look at all those Warriors teams, they got the Draymond Green. You look at you look at all the successful teams in the NBA and like the Bucks when they won, they signed PJ Tucker mid-season to kind of bring that intensity and stuff to the locker room. How big of a role did that play in you hiring Troy to now come and work with you in New Orleans?
Well, beyond that, Mo, I would say that Troy has proven over the years that he has an excellent eye for talent too, not just tension guys. He has an excellent eye for talent, and I wanted a person like that in the building with me every day, because I don't think there's any argument. Yes, we see the competitive tension of the guys, but also, there's a lot of talent there too, and you have to have an eye for that. And Troy has proven that over the years. He has an excellent eye for talent.
Hey Joe, who's been some of the more influential people in your basketball career? I mean, I've known a few of your coaches. I played for a few coaches that you played for, but who in your career has probably influenced you the most in your basketball career?
But B, it's like B. When I was in high school, I'm sitting here in Louisiana watching games on television, and there were guys that I liked. And I just liked the way they played. Two guys, rest their souls, Dennis Johnson, DJ, and Gus Williams, Wizard. I just liked the way those guys played. I'd sit there and watch them and watch stuff that they would do. And I'd watch Gus offensively, what he did. Defensively, I'd watch DJ. And so those are guys that I watched them play, man. And I was like, man, and I love their games, man. And so just guys like that, B. And but in terms of I want to say this, in terms of personalities that influenced me, one of the biggest influences for me was Arthur Ashe in tennis. Just champion, the way he carried himself. You know what I'm saying? Like he was, to me, he was the epitome of class and champion out there. And so I remember just watching him and thinking, man, that's the way to do it right there. Like you can be both. You don't have to be, you know what I mean? So
You could be a good
I
guy and
hated it for that.
compete.
Huh?
You could be a good guy and you could compete at the
Yeah, you can have a little
same
tension out there at the same time.
time.
Who
Good.
are some of the people you look at right now, whether it's in the NBA or in other sports, like you mentioned tennis? Who are the guys that kind of give you, or women who give you the best example of that right now, of being able to compete and have that tension, but also doing it in a championship manner?
Not sure. I do think this. I like the purity of how Jokic approaches the game. He, you know, Mo, he goes on the court. And every play he makes is to win. I've never seen him once chasing stats or doing anything outside of winning. And I have a great appreciation for that. I also have an appreciation for this. He gets a lot of flack. I have an appreciation for the effort that Russell Westbrook brings to the floor every time he steps on the court. I've never seen him cheat the game in terms of his effort. He gives you 100 every night. These guys that go out there and they are void of agendas. They are strictly, I'm gonna play as hard as I can and I'm playing to win. Any guy like that, Mo, I'm a fan of those guys because it's something special when you see guys like that and they go out there and they can impact a game. You know when you see some, well, we probably do. You know when you see someone that's chasing numbers, right? You know when you see somebody chasing numbers. I've never seen the guys I'm talking about, you never see them chasing numbers, man. They're about winning, they're about effort, and those are the guys I have the most respect for.
You know, that team first mentality is maybe the biggest factor, in my opinion, in being successful in anything that you
Oh,
do. You know, it's always got to be
absolutely.
sacrificed for the team ahead of yourself. But you know, looking at your team that you've got down there now in New Orleans, I think the biggest issue that they've had over the past number of years is their health and staying on the court. Do you have any insight or any plan in how to maybe address that and get the guys on the court moving forwards in a way that they've not been able to previously?
I had a it's 10:34 here in New Orleans now, and we got on at 10 o'clock. I had a 10 a.m. meeting this morning that I pushed back because I wanted to be on, I wanted to be on the Hoop Genius podcast. But the it's with one of the health and performance guys, and so he's waiting after this meet. After I hang up with the podcast, I'm going to meet with him and start meeting with those guys, Mo, about this very serious subject that you're talking about. It's very it's of paramount importance here to understand what's going on here. And so I really do. In all seriousness, I do. I have a meeting with him as soon as this is over with. He's coming in and we're going to start meeting about, okay, break down, tell me what's happening here. Just an inordinate amount of injuries and stuff, and just trying to get to the bottom of it.
Well, you know, Joe, we know you got to go. We want to thank you for being you, because that's good enough, Joe. And you've been an example for all of us who've been in the business, who've never cheated the game. And we are a fan of yours. You're always welcome on the show.
Yeah.
And we need to get some New Orleans gear. We need to get gear. Now we're Pelican. Can we just get a couple of t-shirts? That's it. We'll pay for the shirts. We'll pay for it.
Okay.
We need a couple of shirts. And we are part of the conflict. Okay. We're part of the conflict now here. And Joe, thank you so much. Thank you for everything that you've done for the game of basketball. And we just want everyone down in New Orleans who they already know you, but they got they got a great one and they got a good man down there.
I appreciate it, B. And look, man, in all seriousness to you and Mo both, man, and B, you know this, man. I am truly a fan of the show. I watch you guys. You're surprised sometimes.
Yes.
I'll call him at night sometimes, and I'll just start quoting stuff that you guys said. He said, Joe, do you really watch? I said, B, I'm a fan of the show, man. I watch Hoop Genius podcast, man. I sit there and I watch. I'm like, man, these guys are good, man.
BJ called me one time. He's like, oh, Mo, you'll never guess who just called me. I said, who? He said, oh, Joe Dumas just called me. He's talking about our show. I said, what the hell is going on?
Like, I know.
You know, we made Joe a show. We don't really think about it. Hey. Now we've got the league office watching it. And that's the president of the Pelicans tapped in. So, you know, you can feel free show to your new players.
Yes.
I can encourage them. You know, maybe I can relate to the younger generation of them and encourage them to play with a little bit more competitive conflict and competitive tension. Because I speak for myself, I speak for BJ, I speak for all of our listeners. We're really excited to see what you get going and can make happen in New Orleans, because there's so much potential there. And especially in such a great city and such a great destination that maybe hasn't had the teams that it necessarily deserves, to bring that love of the game back to New Orleans and build a team that can compete with the right amount of conflict. So I'm excited. We appreciate you. And it feels like Detroit is taking over the NBA right now, because you're obviously a Pistons legend yourself. You know, Scott Perry, our other host on the show, he just got hired by the Kings. BJ's at the top of the podcast game. He's the hottest on the mic in the world right now. I don't even think there's a rapper out there who's dropping more heat on the mic than BJ Armstrong right now. So, you know, shout out to the city of Detroit as well one time. But Joe, thank you so much for coming on. And is there a message? Guys, is there a message you want to send out to the Pelicans fans before you leave here?
Message I want to send out?
Yes, sir.
We're gonna compete, man. Like we're here to win. Like I don't have a whole lot of, you know, I don't have a long speech, and you know I'm not trying to win the press conference. I'm just here to win. I do know this though. I won't say this though. I need to get a couple of the players here on this show here.
Absolutely.
I'm gonna send them this way. I think I got a couple of players on this team that I said, you know what, you need to go on this show right here.
Oh, absolutely. I think BJ and I, we should take a trip to New Orleans.
Yes.
Take a trip to New Orleans.
Exactly.
We'll get everyone in, sit down with them, chop it up, And I think that's the plan.
Let's do it.
That's definitely the plan. Joe, appreciate you so much for jumping on the show.
Appreciate you, Joe.
We look forward to having you back soon. You're welcome anytime.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Good luck, Joe D. Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. You guys who are listening, make sure you subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple. And until next time, get buckets.